This is Taking Aim with
Ralf Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, the swine flu epidemic in Mexico and the resort to military rule. The first death was in southern Oaxaca State on April 13th. But the Mexican authorities didn't send the first of 14 mucus samples to the United States to the Center for Disease Control until April 18th, around the time that it dispatched health teams to hospitals looking for patients with severe flu or pneumonia-like symptoms. Health authorities had noticed a threefold spike in flu cases in Mexico in late March and then in early April. But they thought it was a late rebound of the December-February flu season. It was only in mid-April that they became alarmed and sent off the samples. Health Secretary Jose Cordova acknowledged that the Mexican labs lacked the profiling data to detect a new strain of virus. What came back? There was a new flu outbreak in Mexico. A new flu outbreak that got the World Health Organization alarmed. Already, their alert level was at 3. But as the cases mounted and they discovered that this was a new swine flu epidemic and that it was entering a dangerous phase, on Monday, this past Monday, as the death toll climbed in Mexico, as the number of suspected cases there and in the United States where it had spread nearly doubled, the World Health Organization raised its alert level to level 4, but stopped short of declaring a global emergency. It's important to look at this new swine flu. Although swine flu has been known to sporadically infect people, there are rare cases where the virus jumps from swine, pigs, to humans. And in these cases, humans have been directly exposed to animals. This happens, for instance, with pig farmers. In this case, people who were contracting the flu weren't exposed to pigs. There was human-to-human dissemination. This virus that has surfaced in Mexico and then in California and Texas and New York is known as A/H1N1, a strain that hadn't been previously detected in either pigs or humans. What worried the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta and the World Health Organization were these cases of person-to-person jump. Neither of the first two California children diagnosed with the illness this spring had close contact with pigs. The CDC said, quote, "This increases the possibility that human-to-human transmission of a new influenza has occurred." And what is strange about this new influenza, or is what we will show is not so strange, is that it combines human, avian, that is bird, and pig flus. Ralph?
Well, Maya, what's instructive about this is that Mexico's Agriculture Department has declared that its inspectors have found no sign of swine flu among pigs around any of the farms. No infected pigs have been identified anywhere in Mexico, according to Associated Press writers E. Eduardo Castillo and Paul Haven on Monday. What's increasingly apparent is that the attribute to this as a swine flu is a misleading attribute indeed, because in fact, one of the features of a swine flu is that the pigs are sick, that the pigs are carriers, and there is not a single pig in Mexico that has been identified as having anything resembling a flu, an illness, or a sickness. according to the authorities, Mexico's Department of Agriculture. And when we begin to understand that this is a strain or variant of flu that has never been seen before, insofar as it combines, as you indicated, Maya, the features of swine, avian, and human-borne flus, we begin to get an understanding of what we're really addressing here. And I want to emphasize, brothers and sisters, that this crisis in Mexico that's now being centered around the question of an epidemic is, in fact, a much more deep-seated and long-standing crisis than the immediacy of this apparent appearance of an epidemic disease. Mexico has been in a fundamental crisis since the election was stolen by Calderon in what everybody understands to have been a completely fake and contrived electoral result. All of the polls and all of the exit polls and all of the indicators and all of the established press made it clear that Calderon had lost that election by a substantial, indeed a massive margin. As in the case of Bush, this election was blatantly stolen. It has never been accepted by the public in Mexico. Leaving aside the limitations of the reformist opponent of Calderon, President Calderon has been unable to appear in public. He does not dare risk even going out on a public street in Mexico. So hated and isolated is this figure that he dare not appear without a cordon of police and military if he leaves his office or his home. If there is even the smallest indicator of a reform politician or an opponent of Calderon holding a meeting, hundreds of thousands of people will turn out. This regime is isolated. This regime is hated. This regime is under siege at a moment when the economic collapse of the capitalist system has had an incredible impact on the Mexican economy itself, immiserating vast numbers of people, exacerbating the impact of the already devastated economy due to NAFTA's destruction of 500,000 jobs in Mexico. This is the context in which this convenient flu appears. When already there had been talk in the press that the regime was considered forms of military rule, those forms are being rapidly put in place in response to the apparent crisis of an epidemic as opposed to the crisis of a regime in a process of decomposition.
Ralph, let's return to the flu itself. The new viral strain, and new viral strains are occurring again and again, they occur either in a laboratory, man-made, or they recur in a process called antigenic shift or reassortment when at least two viruses combine. Now, this can happen when a cell is infected by two different flu viruses and some of their genes are exchanged during replication. It's explained in many articles and particularly in the Wall Street Journal, April 25th, scientists fear people spread new swine flu. And the article notes, pigs are especially prone to be such mixing vessels, since they can be infected by viruses that infect swine, birds, and humans. Reassortment is often seen in water birds, especially ducks. Though these birds don't show symptoms, they shed the virus in their feces, which go on to infect the pigs or possibly humans who come in close contact. It's important to note, as you did before, that there is no evidence of the people, particularly those in California and New York, who have come down, the children who have come down with this new swine flu, ever having been in contact with pigs. The Center for Disease Control did the DNA, the genetic study of this flu. The genetic segments of the current swine flu virus come from bird flu viruses found in North America, one gene segment from a human flu virus, and two gene segments typically seen in pig flu viruses in Europe and Asia, what they call a Eurasian strain. The symptoms have been mild for most people, and they're similar to those found in a seasonal human flu, such as Ralph came down with many weeks ago, very serious flu. And this includes fever, respiratory symptoms, nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. The virus is sensitive to acetaminophen, whose brand name is Tamiflu, and Zamivir, That is Relenza. And we're going to discuss in greater detail the economics of both Tamiflu and Relenza and who is connected with each of these medications. So let's look again at the politics, and let's look at what the Mexican government in particular did in response to the cases of this new swine flu.
Well, Maya, we have to understand again the orchestration of crisis in Mexico that antedated, that preceded the convenient emergence of this apparent medical crisis or emergency. We have had a drumbeat of demand from the United States in the person of Obama and other U.S. Officials, Clinton, the Secretary of State, the Homeland Security people, that the crisis in Mexico is due to drugs, that the Mexican government is incapable of coping with the drug epidemic in Mexico, a terrible irony insofar as the United States is by far a greater purveyor and presence of drugs than any other society, including that of Mexico. In fact, virtually every bank in the United States has been processing the proceeds of the $750 billion annual income from heroin and cocaine traffic. You can't any longer distinguish it from the normal workings of finance capital. It is processed through the banks in Florida, New Jersey, and New York, including Citibank and Bank of America and all of the majors. It translates into majority ownership of shares in General Dynamics. Drug income is a facet of military and police activity in the United States, and above all, the capitalist profiteering that the banks facilitate. So when one talks about drugs and deploys that as a rationale for destabilizing Mexico, as the regime in the United States has attempted to do, there's something else afoot. That something else is the isolation of the regime, the radicalization of the public, and the constant prospect of an uprising in Mexico, which has agitated and motivated the alarm that have been signaling from Washington over the past 6 months.
Ralph, when the World Health Organization on Monday raised the alert to phase four, that meant they recognized that there was sustained human-to-human transmission of the virus causing outbreaks in at least one country. Now, there have been cases in the United States, in Canada, and in other countries, because people taking planes who had been in Mexico have been spreading the virus. At this time, containment is not a feasible option, said the World Health Organization Assistant Director General Keiji Fukuda. He said, as the virus has already spread to several other countries. Putting an alert at phases 4 or 5 signals that the virus is becoming increasingly adept at spreading among humans. That move could lead governments to set trade, travel, and other restrictions aimed at limiting its spread. And that is what has been happening, with quarantine, investigating people as they get off planes. For instance, Russia, Hong Kong, and Taiwan said they would quarantine visitors showing symptoms of the virus amid fears that there could be a global pandemic. As people get off planes in Japan, the authorities have heat scanners, and anyone with a temperature of 100.4 or above is set aside for questioning and quarantine. Anyone with a flu could have that temperature of 100.4. And in the United States, what President Obama has done and the authorities is to call a national health emergency. And in doing so, they have released the big stockpile of Tamiflu, sending it around to states. Janet Napolitano said, "We are proceeding as if we are preparatory to a full pandemic."
Janet Napolitano is the Homeland Security representative of Obama. And in that context, Maya, we have to look at the alarmist headlines and examine their political impact. Is swine flu the big one? Mike Stobe, the Associated Press medical writer. As reports of a unique form of swine flu erupt around the world, the inevitable question arises, is this the big one? Is this the next big global flu epidemic that public health experts have long anticipated and worried about? Is this the novel virus that will kill millions around the world, as pandemics did in 1918, 1957, and 1968? Is this the opening act of a full-fledged influenza pandemic? Asked Michael Osterholm, the prominent expert on global flu outbreaks with the University of Minnesota. We have no clue right now where we are. That's the problem, he said. Now, what's instructive about this is that this so-called swine flu, and again, let me repeat that the attempt to characterize it as a swine flu is extremely misleading. There are several types of swine-related viral components of this presumptive flu, but as we've indicated, it combines avian and other features that have never been seen before. And that really raises the question which we will be examining shortly. But what is happening in Mexico? The epicenter, as AP calls it. President Felipe Calderón has assumed new powers. He has issued executive orders entitling the police and the military to be able to enter the home of anybody in Mexico, to identify people who may show fever or other symptoms, and to take them out at the discretion of the military and the police. He has shut down schools. He has shut down universities. He has shut down transportation centers. He has, in effect, established a military dictatorship in all but name under the pretext of responding to a flu crisis about which they are doing vanishingly little other than to put into place an apparatus of control which deprives the population of Mexico of the right of free movement, of the right of privacy in their homes, and of any recourse to the arbitrary entitlement of the military and the police to detain people, to round them up, and to enter their homes at will.
Ralph, in particular, as you said, Mexico canceled schools at all levels nationwide until May 6th. The Mexico City government said it was considering a complete shutdown, including all public transportation. The Labor Secretary, Javier Lozanzo Alarcón, said that employers should isolate anyone showing up for work with a fever, a cough, a sore throat, or other signs of the flu. Mexican authorities announced on Monday the cancellation of the annual Cinco de Mayo parade, in which people in period costumes celebrate Mexico's defeat of the French army on May 5th, 1862, a very important day for the struggle and the sovereignty of the Mexican people. And also, the National Labor Umbrella Group announced the cancellation of Mexico City's traditional May Day parade. The National Institute of Anthropology and History said all of its 116 museums nationwide would be closed until further notice. We have throughout Mexico City people stockpiling bottled water, tinned food. Churchgoers have avoided attending Sunday services, and it's impossible to attend them because the churches and the cathedrals are all closed. Police officers stood in Mexico City handing out blue surgical masks. This despite the fact that the Center for Disease Control in the United States says that masks are not of any use except for healthcare workers. And it's interesting to look at what is happening overseas. The Scotsman had a banner headline referring to your alarmist headlines, kissing banned, and medics, not bouncers, stand guard at bars as the flu epicenter falls eerily silent. And they're referring to the fact that the Mexican government has told people not to touch each other, and that also the authorities, the police, went bar by bar, restaurant by restaurant, and closed 70% of the cafes, restaurants, and bars in Mexico City, and intend to do so for over a week.
Well, Maya, in the New York Times, the headline is, Mexico takes power to isolate cases of swine flu. This sprawling capital was on edge as jittery residents ventured out wearing surgical masks, and President Felipe Calderón published an order giving his government emergency powers. including isolating those who have contracted the virus, inspecting the homes of people, and ordering the cancellation of all public events. White-coated healthcare workers and soldiers fanned out across the international airport looking for ailing passengers. Thousands of callers fearful they may have contracted the rare flu flooded government health hotlines. Of those Mexicans who did go out in public, many took the advice and donned masks, known here as tapabocas, or cover your mouths, and were handed out by soldiers at subway stops and on street corners. Quote, "My government will not delay one minute to take all necessary measures," Mr. Calderon said in Oaxaca State during the opening of a new hospital, which he said would set aside an area for any who may be affected by the swine flu strain. Mr. Calderon pointed out that he and other officials who attended the ceremony intentionally did not greet each other with handshakes or kisses on the cheek. At a news conference, Mexico's health minister, José Ángel Córdova, said 20 of the 81 reported deaths were confirmed to have been caused by swine flu, and the rest are being studied. The government announced that schools in and around the capital that serves millions of students would remain closed. 20 million people, the New York Times continues, together, tight in Mexico City, which typically bursts forth on the weekends into parks, playgrounds, cultural centers, and sidewalk cafes, but not now. Not now. Brothers and sisters.
Ralph, the number of deaths have doubled since this article has been written, and this is what has alarmed the World Health Organization and why they raised the alert level. There are over 2,000 people who are suspected of having this new flu, and I don't think we should, as you rightly say, I don't think we should call it a swine flu, even though that's how they term it, because it is a combination of avian, human, and swine flu viruses.
Strains and genomes that have not been properly identified. Maya,
and probably are created in a laboratory. That is our supposition.
Which is not merely a supposition. We're going to address that very specifically, but I want to mention a particular matter here. Here's the headline in the San Francisco Chronicle by from Associated Press. White House to detail government response. President Obama has received regular briefings from advisors on the swine flu outbreak, and the White House is readying guidance for Americans. While the Obama administration planned a Sunday briefing to outline the government response. Press Secretary Robert Gibbs says the outbreak is serious. He told Meet the Press that Obama is getting updates every few hours on the situation. Let's put it this way. The president is taking this very seriously. He has assembled teams from the Centers for Disease Control and Homeland Security and is being briefed regularly. He has asked them to speak to the American people and give the appropriate counsel. So what we're looking at here is an escalation of the alarmist rhetoric and the virtual military preparations within the United States itself.
Ralph, I want to go back to what you were mentioning before about no evidence of this flu appearing in pigs, that is, swines, in Mexico. One of the first cases was a 4-year-old boy who contracted the virus before April 2nd in Veracruz, where the community had been protesting pollution from a large pig farm. Now, this was the 4-year-old boy, although most of the cases of the swine flu, what they're calling the swine flu, this new A/H1N1 virus, are between 19 and 30. The farm is run by Granjas Carol de Mexico. This is a joint venture half-owned by the Virginia-based Smithfield Foods, Inc., which is the largest of the industrial pig operations. Spokeswoman Kara Ulrich said the company has found no clinical signs or symptoms of the presence of swine flu in its herd or its employees working anywhere in Mexico. Mexico's agriculture department said Monday that its inspectors also found no sign of swine flu among pigs around the farm in Veracruz, and that no infected pigs had been found yet anywhere in Mexico. So unless Smithfield Foods has been destroying and isolating the sick pigs, we have a case where none of its employees are ill. this seems like clear evidence that this is not a flu that has moved on from contact with pigs, but that it is a flu that was generated in a laboratory.
The Virginia Bioinformatics Institute at Virginia Tech, in its research publication for the winter of 2009, has put out a declaration called Putting the Brakes on a Pandemic Influenza Outbreak. And it describes how Lancet, the health experts, looking at data of the great 1918 flu pandemic, predicted that between 50 to 80 million will die worldwide, depending on the virulence of a virus. The World Bank has concluded that a flu pandemic, which they are anticipating as inevitable, will have an enormous impact on the world economy and will create crisis conditions that will require extreme measures by governments in many parts of the world.
Ralph, you took down that Lancet article from the internet. It's a significant article in its conclusions, and most of the article describes its statistical analysis, but its conclusion is very important. These pandemics affect mostly people, as I mentioned before, between 15 and 29 years old. And if there is a global pandemic, 96% of the deaths will occur in impoverished countries, the developing countries. 96% of the deaths. This is a class war, a war on poor people.
Maya, let's look at what has already been in advanced preparation in the United States. The El Paso Times on February 8th disclosed the following. Texas crafts plan for Mexico collapse. Brothers and sisters, that's on the 8th of February, before any indication of this presumptive epidemic of flu had hit the papers or even been a matter of public discourse. Texas officials are working on a plan to respond to the collapse of the Mexican government and the specter of thousands fleeing north in fear of their lives after recent reports indicated the country is on the verge of chaos. That chaos is a reference to what I was mentioning before, brothers and sisters, the increasing radicalization of the Mexican people, their mobilization against this hated and isolated regime, their response to the economic impact of the capitalist crisis, their general disaffection, and their preparation for mass forms of struggle. The specter of thousands fleeing north in fear of their lives? In fear of lives from what? You hope for the best and you plan for the worst, Catherine Sessinger, spokesperson for Texas Governor Rick Perry, said last week. The El Paso Times is reporting on February 8th. We have a contingency plan. Late last year, the United States Department of Defense issued a report that listed Pakistan and Mexico as countries that are on the verge of rapid collapse. The report came after similar alarms were sounded by the United States Department of Homeland Security and former U.S. drug czar Barry McCaffrey. Quote, I think their fears are well-grounded, Texas Homeland Security Director Steve McCraw told lawmakers. Lawmakers expressed concern that the state's southern neighbor embroiled in drug violence and facing uncertain economic conditions could send thousands north in search of safety. State Senator Dan Patrick, a Republican from Sugarland, stated that Texas had a plan to cope with the situation. And Director Steve McGraw of Homeland Security in Texas says, we have a plan. There needs to be one in place. It deals with not only law enforcement concerns. What we're looking at here, brothers and sisters, is the clear signal that all that we're seeing now was well prepared for, well anticipated, and already orchestrated in the enforcement and intelligence services of the United States, and with due indicators to the public in the form of these leaked stories in the El Paso Times on February 8th.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, the swine flu epidemic in Mexico and the resort to military rule. Before we continue, Ralph, I'd like to mention one aspect of the developing epidemic, the fear that it could become a pandemic. When we look at the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918 to 20, which many have said is misnamed as a Spanish flu, that was an avian flu. In World War I, it spread through many of the soldiers, and there was no treatment. The estimates of how many people died vary from 20 to 100 million, often cited as 50 million. It's important to note that there was no treatment, and many people didn't get medical care. What they have noticed about the current Mexican flu is that it has been very mild, and that people are getting treatment when they noticed serious cases. So the resort to the military apparatus is extreme, and is a test case of what would happen in Mexico using martial law for other reasons, for political reasons. This is a political act when they resort to closing the schools and shutting down the restaurants and the cafes and the museums. Ralph.
White House preparing for flu epidemic. October 6, 2005. Experts unlock clues to the spread of the 1918 flu virus, an article by Gina Colata in the New York Times. The 1918 influenza virus, the cause of one of history's most deadly epidemics, has been reconstructed. It was the culmination of work that began a decade ago, involving fishing tiny fragments of the 1918 virus from snippets of lung tissue from soldiers and an Alaska woman who died in the 1918 pandemic. The soldiers' tissue have been saved in an army pathology warehouse, and the woman had been buried in permanently frozen ground. This is huge, 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 said John Oxford, a professor of virology at St. Bartholomew's in the Royal London Hospital. It's a huge breakthrough. We are putting a searchlight on a virus that killed 50 million people. I can't think of anything bigger that's happened in virology for many years. Now, what's interesting about this long and detailed article is that we learn that military labs and the military itself and scientists at their behest have been engaged in reconstructing the genome of a long-extinct virus, the virus that killed at least 50 million people in 1918. President Bush, in 2005, asked the leaders of the world's top vaccine manufacturers, Chiron, Sanofi, Avantis, Wyeth, GlaxoSmithKline, and Merck, to come to the White House to discuss preparations for a pandemic flu. People with knowledge of the meeting who insisted on anonymity disclosed what had occurred at the White House. The research on the 1918 virus is directly applicable to current concerns, Dr. Anthony C. Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, and Dr. Julie Gerberding, director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, said in a joint statement. What are we looking at here? Here's an important assessment of what we are looking at by a scholar and a scientist in this field. Our best intelligence estimate is that the pandemic avian flu has been created through genetic engineering in the United States, fusing the deadly genome of the 1918 pandemic, misnamed the Spanish flu, with the DNA of the innocuous H5N1 virus in a growth medium of human kidney cells, according to the National Institutes of Health and the vaccine's manufacturer. Some virologists believe this would ensure the man-made mutant virus would recognize human cells and know how to invade them, a basic virological fact that the public has not been told, the article continues, is that it is impossible to make a vaccine against a virus that does not yet exist. Public relations statements to the contrary. If a vaccine is being made against the avian flu virus in pandemic form, that means the pandemic virus has already been created, period, end of discussion. So the fact that the avian flu vaccine is already being manufactured is not only peculiar, the article continues, but at the very least sinister. This is a very important evaluation by the noted health activist Rima E. Labo, a doctor whose organization, the National Solutions Foundation, has been examining rogue governmental operatives and the militarization of viral agents and their genomes.
Ralph, they're referring to the avian flu virus, the H5N1, such as with SARS, the past epidemic that they expected to be a pandemic. This latest version is swine flu, although it combines the avian flu and human flu traits, making it especially worrisome as the human-to-human contact seems to be the way it is being spread. And we should note that the children and the other people who have become ill in California, for instance, have not been in any contact with pigs and were not in Mexico. I would like to refer to an article, again talking about testing, that appeared December 27, 2004. The CDC to conduct avian flu pandemic experiments. And this was an article referring to the U.S. CDC, but it appeared in Toronto and was disseminated by CTV.Canada. Early in the new year, U.S. scientists will begin experiments, that is early in 2005, that should provide some answers to the questions about how H5N1 spreads. What are these experiments? They hope to learn why a virus that nature designed to infect migratory water birds has astonishing capacity to kill mammal species ranging from house cats to tigers to humans. And what they are doing is macabre. The researchers from the influenza branch of the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta will mate the H5N1, that's the avian flu virus, and human flu viruses in a process known as resortment. Viable offspring will be tested in animals thought to be good surrogates for humans, and this is usually pigs, to see as if the viruses can be transmitted easily from infected animals to healthy ones, and to note the severity of disease each provokes. The CDC researchers will be deliberately engineering viruses of pandemic potential. It's high risk but crucial work, notes this article. The influenza community insists. It's a dangerous experiment, admits Dr. Robert Webster, a world-renowned expert on influenza based at St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee. Ralph?
I emphasize again, what Dr. Imbo had indicated is that the pandemic avian flu has been created through genetic engineering, fusing the deadly genome of the 1918 pandemic with the DNA of the innocuous H5N1 virus. The Spanish flu, which was not Spanish at all, was created in the United States through an early bioweapons program. And it was injected into healthy young soldiers as the first mandatory vaccination in the military during World War I. The so-called Spanish flu originated in Kansas on U.S. military bases. It killed millions worldwide. Indeed, in the Washington Post on October 10th, 2005, the article by David Brown amplifies what we are discussing here. Resurrecting the 1918 flu virus took many turns. It took a lot of digging to bring back to life the Spanish influenza virus, done with invisible molecular primers, done with picks and shovels in the frozen ground of Alaska, a huge amount of work on a project whose chances of success at the start seemed very, very slim. Now it will go down as one of the most astonishing technical feats, the viral equivalent of bringing dinosaurs back in the fictional Jurassic Park. The Spanish flu killed at least 50 million people around the world in slightly more than a year. Researchers have never figured out what made the virus so lethal. With a genome of 13,600 nucleotides known and published in the journals of Science and Nature, the 1918 virus is already shedding light on its own history. This is a detailed article, and it is amplified by an important piece by F. William Engdahl on August 14, 2008. Avian flu biowar vaccine, the Pentagon's alarming project. There's alarming evidence accumulated by serious scientific sources. The United States is weaponizing avian flu. This will unleash a new pandemic on the planet that will be more devastating than the 1918 Spanish flu epidemic, which killed an estimated 50 million people worldwide. Pentagon experiments with remains in frozen state of the 1918 virus are the height of scientific folly. The United States is about to unleash a racially selective pandemic through the process of mandatory vaccination with an alleged vaccine against avian flu. And interestingly enough, the genome of the 1918 pandemic was intentionally resurrected by the United States in weaponized labs, and indeed its function is, as it was indeed explained by Rainbow, to create a form, a altered genome form of viral agent for which there is no known immune response on the part of humans. Again, the Spanish flu, as articulated here by Engdahl in his important article, originated in Fort Devens, a U.S. Army base in Massachusetts, with 45,000 soldiers crowded into a space, excellent breeding ground for the spread of this deadly disease. It was one of the most successful biological weapons ever created until now. William Henry Welch of Johns Hopkins and the Rockefeller Institute, a noted pathologist, oversaw the spread of the pandemic under the Army Surgeon General.
Ralph, in 2005, when the work of recombining was taking place in the CDC labs and also, I should note, in universities in the United States, Sabine Russell, the San Francisco Chronicle medical writer, wrote, quote, deadliest flu bug given new life in the U.S. laboratory. And the new scientist sounded the alarm, quote, superflu is being brewed in the lab. After worldwide alarm triggered by the 2003 SARS outbreak, it may seem reckless to set about creating a potentially far more devastating virus in the lab, but that is what is being undertaken. We know that the H5N1 bird flu virus ravaging poultry farms in Asia can be lethal when it infects people, but they are now in this laboratory work tinkering with the genes to develop a strain capable of spreading from human to human. They are creating a virus that can kill tens of millions if it gets out of the lab. That is the new scientist speaking. And then, on April 25th, the journalist Wayne Madsen wrote, quote, our Mexico City source, and I note that this is an unnamed source by Madsen, said a top scientist for the United Nations who has examined the outbreak of the deadly Ebola virus in Africa as well as HIV/AIDS victims concluded that the H1N1, that is the flu that is spreading throughout Mexico and also has appeared in other countries in the world, possesses certain transmission vectors that suggest that new flu strain has been genetically manufactured as a military biological warfare weapon. The United Nations expert believes that Ebola, HIV/AIDS, and the current A/H1N1 swine flu virus are biological warfare agents. And that's quoting from Wayne Madsen on April 25th of this year.
Maya, the United States Air Force prepared a study in 1996 projecting the impact of pandemic disease, pandemic catastrophes between 1996 and 2025. They predicted, interestingly enough, that in 2009 there would be an influenza pandemic, a combination of avian flu with other undisclosed elements. This is a study in 1996 of the United States Air Force. The Department of Defense has been carrying out military missions during pandemics. Here is an important reference to a bill that will establish national emergency centers on military installations, FEMA camps, mandated in H.R. 645 on January 22, 2009, a bill to direct the Secretary of Homeland Security to establish national emergency centers on military installations. In general, 645 stipulates, in accordance with the requirements of this act, the Secretary of Homeland Security shall establish not fewer than 6 national emergency centers on military installations to provide centralized locations to improve the coordination of preparedness, response, and recovery efforts. On Thursday, the directive was issued, a National Strategy for Public Health and Medical Preparedness, which built on principles set forth in a prior document prepared by the Bush administration called Biodefense for the 21st Century, issued in April 2004, to, quote, transform our national approach to health disasters. The Homeland Security Presidential Directive that was issued on October 18, 2007, HSPD 21, states that within 1 year of the directive's date, the Secretaries of Health, Human Services, and Defense, in coordination with the Secretaries of Veteran Affairs and Homeland Security, shall establish a joint program for disaster medicine and public health in coordination with the Department of Defense, and to be carried out with military missions within this joint program. On the 7th of January of this year, in the Army Times, American Forces Press Service, students in the basic course at the Chemical Biological Incident Response Force have been instructed that the United States Marines have been assigned to the Chemical Biological Incident Response Force and have approached their final training in a course required of them in a highly special unit tasked by the Department of Defense to respond to disasters that require federal assistance. The Marine Squad's weapons were combined with metal pry bars, Kevlar helmets, construction hard hats, and combat uniforms. The mock disaster scenario involves building collapses, and the Iraq combat veterans who lead the squad's efforts stipulated, "I was squad leader again in the infantry." Except, he says, that the mission is at home. Despite the fact that we no longer kick down doors and give chase to the enemy, we will have major military responsibilities. You give the Marine Corps a mission, and they're going to put their shoulders to the wheel and give it 110%. Interestingly, in the early 1990s, senior military officials addressed the growing threat of terrorists using chemical and biological weapons to attack the United States, and in 1995, then-President Bill Clinton signed a directive declaring that the United States would give the highest priority to developing military capabilities to be deployed throughout the domestic United States in the advent of a medical or epidemic disaster. Here in the Army Times, an article by Gene Cavallaro on September 30th, 2008, the 3rd Infantry Division's 1st Brigade Combat Team has spent 35 of the last 60 months in preparing for a mission at home. It is not the first time an active duty unit has been tapped to help at home. In August 2005, when Hurricane Katrina unleashed itself in Mississippi and Louisiana, active duty units were pulled from posts and mobilized to these areas. This is a clear and direct allocation of the military resources in command to undertake domestic activity predicated upon an epidemic event in the United States. Bush, in his Biodefense for the 21st Century, said in his declaration, "Bioterrorism is the real threat to our country. Terrorist groups seek biological weapons. It is important that we confront these real threats to our country and prepare for the future emergency." And that was the rationale for assigning to the U.S. military the responsibility for what would normally be civilian tasks. And again, Marines admit security forced to operate inside the United States. Following a denial that the U.S. Army combat teams would be used to deal with civil unrest, an Army Times report concedes that Marines have been assigned to a security force that will operate within the country. A September 8th Army Times report stated that active duty troops from the 3rd Infantry Division's 1st Brigade Combat Team will be called on as a response force for any disasters for a period of 12 months. The disclosure about preparation to use the military within the United States is combined with a 10-year U.S. strategic plan for detention camps, which revives proposals that originated with Oliver North and are central to the construction of detention centers that were authorized by Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff and have been amplified in relation to the prospect of a pandemic in the United States.
I would like to mention here, Ralph, the financial remuneration to members of the past administration as a result of the militarization of pandemics. And that is, the Bush administration had decided that it was important to stockpile large doses of antiviral agents. And in particular, it was allocating $1 billion of Tamiflu to be injected into U.S. military personnel as a precaution. This is what Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld was proposing at the time. And it turned out that then Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld had been the chairman and principal stockholder of a California pharmaceutical company, Gilead Sciences, Inc., which had developed and patented Tamiflu in 1996, first as a drug for AIDS, later as a vaccine, which it turned out it wasn't, for H5N1 avian flu, but it is used as an antiviral agent to modify, to ameliorate flu symptoms. In 1997, Donald Rumsfeld had been named the chairman of the Board of Gilead Sciences, which he remained until early 2001 when he became the defense secretary. But as secretary, he refused to sell his stock in Gilead. Now, the Tamiflu is made by Roche, which now manufactures and distributes the drug, but Gilead gets a patent fee for every dose. When the U.S. declared a national health emergency last Sunday, that allowed Washington to ship roughly 12 million doses from its 30 million dose stockpile of the flu-fighting medication, and it would be distributed to the states. So Donald Rumsfeld is counting up his coins as this emergency is declared.
Well, Maya, we did an 8-part series on forging the next pandemic, and I did a presentation in New York called From Forging 9/11 to Creating the Next Pandemic, a system in terminal decay. At that time, I addressed the what you're referring to here, bird flu, a corporate bonanza for the biotech industry, Tamiflu, Vistid, and the Pentagon agenda. This is also a study that was done by F. William Engdahl, on which we elaborated. This study, by the way, the Pandemic Influenza Strategic Plan, projects a pandemic influence in the United States, and it states, if history is our guide, there is reason to be concerned. In the last century, our country and the world have been hit by 3 influenza pandemics. The viruses from birds contributed to all of them, and it goes on. Now, the saga of Tamiflu is but the tip of a huge iceberg. Both Cheney and Rumsfeld were associated with G.D. Searle, the pharmaceutical company. And indeed, the real point of the interest in that company is that it developed Tamiflu. By the way, it also developed aspartame, which has killed a substantial number of people. But again, Gilead scientists are listed on the NASDAQ as GILD, and the chairman of the board was the Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld. He purchased additional stock in Gilead for $18 million, making him one of the largest, if not the largest, stockholder in that firm. So, as Fortune magazine reported, the defense secretary decided not to sell his shares in Gilead, and he stated he didn't want to sell them because he didn't want to be accused of insider trading. He decided to hold them so that the announcement by the president that the government would be expending huge sums of money to allocate Tamiflu as the drug of resort that the government would stockpile and impose on everybody in the country, that this announcement by Bush would allow the stock to climb. When Rumsfeld became the Secretary of Defense. Gilead's stock went from $7 a share to a hair above $50 a share. He made a 720% profit on $18 million in a short space of time. He has a big stake in imposing on the American people the Tamiflu, and it is only the little beginning. It is part of a market capitalization of $22 billion, and on its board there's Bechtel corporate director and former Secretary of State George Shultz. The relationship between the capitalist economy, the gangster operators of it, the militarization of society, the creation of contrived altered genomes as weaponized instruments for terrorizing the peoples of the world, their present unleashing in Mexico, and the implications for the United States are very clear, brothers and sisters. This is a criminal ruling class, and they stop at nothing, and we will stop at nothing to stop them.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoen
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, the swine flu epidemic in Mexico and the resort to military rule, will be on our website. Visit it at www.takingaimradio.com and please contact us at takingaim@pacbell.net. We'll be with you next week. Tiki tiki no biniye, tasan